I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. If you happen to stop by the Israeli embassy in one of the world capitals arming the genocide in Gaza today, you'll find thousands of UK security forces on high alert. Today's protests in the British capital follow unprecedented mass killing of men, women and children in West Asia. The UK state, together with its totalitarian media, has responded by controlling the story and detaining activists like Sarah Wilkinson. This all in a week where UK War Minister John Healey doubled down on 320 weapons export licenses to Netanyahu before a planned meeting at the Ramstein Air Base in US-occupied Germany to discuss the UK's multi-billion-dollar arming of a Ukraine that has banned elections, opposition parties and media. Is it any wonder that the government of the UK, formerly owner of the country of Palestine that is to some known as Israel, is in such a frenzy to shut down Palestinian solidarity by banning university protests and arresting dissenters? Joining me from a London in turmoil is a political candidate who branded a UK Home Secretary a war criminal live on UK television. She hasn't been seen on mainstream UK TV since. Fiona Lally is National Campaigns Coordinator for the UK Revolutionary Communist Party, coordinating multiple pro-Palestinian encampments across UK universities, some of which have now been banned. Fiona, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. You know, in a normal, more peaceful world, I might be asking you about the class war of the Grenfell fire, which Going Underground covered a lot when we were based in London, a whitewash inquiry to many. But I suppose I better begin. Why will you and perhaps tens or hundreds of thousands be outside Israel's embassy in London today?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I mean, the majority of people, all of the polls show that the majority of people in Britain do not support what Israel is doing, do not support even the British government's involvement in supplying arms and funding for Israel in its genocide against the Palestinians. And despite that, we have a government that is continuing to support that. And so it's important for us to consistently demonstrate that as much as we can, demonstrate actually what the vast majority of people think, in spite of everything that the government has done. The British government, when it was led by the Tories, and still now when it's led by Labour, have done as much as they can to intimidate people out of protesting. You referenced, of course, the arrest of the journalist Sarah Wilkinson and the constant clampdown on students in the encampments. I was at the SOAS encampment earlier this week talking to students who have been expelled and suspended, prevented even from graduating. They've gone so far. Suella Braverman, I think at one point, very, very early on, she tried to say it might be a criminal offence to wave the Palestinian flag in an aggressive manner. They've tried so hard to criminalise and slander this whole movement. And so it's so important for us to be out there to show that it's not working. And actually, much to their dismay, I think it's getting bigger.
Yeah, Suella Braverman, that Boris Johnson or Rishi Sunak official, Home Secretary, you called her a war criminal. This Labour government, Starmer, unpopular when he was elected, Sir Keir Starmer, agent of MI6, accused of by some people, but financed by Israel, this whole new British government, clearly funded by lobbyists for Israel. What do you make of that amidst this genocide? Of course, some media saying, look, he's stopped two licences of child-killing weapons this week.
I think it shows that what's happening in Palestine today is a reflection of a global system and actually what Western imperialism wants to maintain across that entire region. And if you're an individual who seeks to defend British capitalist interests, it doesn't matter what party you're from, if you're a defender of that, you are going to end up defending Israel. You can try and claim you're doing it in a soft way, as they've tried to, you know, announce with this really pitiful, you know, we're suspending just a few of the arms, and they're trying to make a big deal out of this, but everyone can see through it. They are ardent defenders, actually, of whatever America's imperialist interests are in the region, and they're happy to go along with that. And as a result, they're justifying what Israel is continuing to do. I think it's so important not to allow any smugness from the Labour Party that they're somehow more progressive than the Tories were on Palestine, because it's absolutely categorically false, and no one is buying it. It makes me think of this, this quote by Malcolm X, where he says something like, if you stab me in the back 9 inches, but pull the knife out 6 inches, that's not progress. And then he says, even if you pull it out the whole way, that's still not progress. Progress would be healing the wound of the blow. And Britain, the British state, historically, as you said, is so complicit in setting up the problems and the sufferings of the Palestinians, and still today is complicit in it. And so it's really important that we don't allow the Labour government and Starmer and David Lammy himself, who's also had, you know, lobbyists, Zionist lobbying for a long, long time and received money from them. They're allowed no moral superiority on this question. And I don't think anyone is buying it at all.
Yeah, Lammy, the foreign secretary, he was at a banquet with Israeli ambassador to Britain, Tzipi Hotovely, who will be presumably behind these barricades today at the demonstrations. And the foreign secretary, Lammy, said, said, without you, I would never have made it to where I am, because some of the people there at the Israeli function paid for his Harvard University fees, as far as I understand it. Starmer was asked by outgoing Sunak about whether he had informed the United States before these pitiful three licenses, presumably on legal advice, and some saying the lawyers were going to resign, the official government lawyers were going to resign if they had allowed these particular weapons sent to Netanyahu to kill children. What do you make of this relationship between the United States? And Starmer said immediately, yes, yes, I talked. The US was informed.
Yeah, I think it shows how Britain is kind of like a lapdog to American imperialism and American interests. Britain will go along essentially with whatever America says. And it also shows in a distorted way how, even though Britain once was this huge empire that kind of, you know, ruled the waves and played this massive role on the world stage, in a distorted way that has declined. And now they play the role of just supporting America. And I think it also shows that no matter who wins even the US election, you know, Starmer and even David Lammy in the past, I think, had made some tweets against Trump and, you know, and said, oh, isn't he a terrible person? We know that as soon as they get into the positions that they're in, everything will slot into place and they'll continue to play the role that is necessary to facilitate Western imperialist interests. And those interests are set by America first and foremost, which is the most dominant reactionary power in the whole world. And Britain is just the loyal lapdog to that service, whoever is sitting in the White House, I think.
And clearly the encampments that you're helping to organise around the country, they people there share your opinion that you just gave me there. But those elites who don't support the encampments for Palestine or an understanding of the levels of class warfare in your country, will they similarly switch to Trump if Trump wins in November then?
I think so. As in, I think that what is more fearful to these people, even if they would prefer Kamala Harris to Donald Trump, the thing they are most scared of is a powerful Palestine movement, a powerful movement of the working class in their own country, no matter what way it's going. They can accommodate any individual politician, even if they're not exactly on their spectrum, so long as they're still in the same camp. I mean, you talk about class warfare, this is exactly it. The world today in America and Britain and in many other places, I think, is polarizing. I think the divide between, I would say, the ruling class and the working class is becoming bigger. Inequality is soaring and political opinion is polarizing. I think it's very rare to come across someone who is disinterested in politics or considers themselves just in the center. The status quo, the center ground, is completely collapsing. And Palestine is very interesting because it serves as a litmus test for where do you stand? Is it with the oppressed or with the oppressor? who do you defend? Is it American imperialist interests, or is it the right for people to live their lives in dignity? And I think that all over the world, that is being expressed in various different formats. And whether it's Trump or Kamala Harris, even the more sensible politicians in Britain or whatever it is, they can see that ultimately they're on the same side. Our job, and my job as an organizer, is to show as many people as possible, yeah, we are on two different sides here, and we should unite our struggles against these common oppressors. And I think the ground for that today really exists. I think it exists, and it's growing. It's fertile.
And clearly you're not given a chance to make those arguments on the totalitarian media system in Britain. How important is it that the message you just gave me there is not transmitted on the legacy media channels, the Murdoch newspapers, whether it be The Times, The Sun, The Guardian, or whatever, let alone the channels you have there, and that message made similarly by politicians in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, the mainstream media in Britain, of course, is not going to, allow the most radical voices onto it. I mean, not even just that, even the more moderate voices who do make it on, everything that they say is immediately tempered or corrected by the interviewer who's discussing it. We've all seen it, the interviews where someone talks about the genocide in Palestine, and they're immediately told, well, yes, of course, Israel would not claim that a genocide is taking place. Or yes, of course, Israel, you know, they always have to give Israel's side of the equation. But more so than that, I think what's important to highlight is, why do they do this? Another example is, there's been a lot in the news recently about this millionaire Mick Lynch, who drowned, you know, live.
The British Bill Gates on a yacht.
Yes. People absolutely fascinated by what is taking place and talking about it and discussing it, and then discussions about, are super yachts safe? You know, should this be happening? Meanwhile, you know, people are dying every single day, one in Britain due to austerity, all over the world due to Britain's involvement, whether it's in Gaza, or as you say today, you know, or this week, there's been discussions about the Grenfell inquiry that has now come out. 72 people who, let's be honest, were murdered because profit-seeking companies and people constantly making cuts, and 72 people who died as a result of that. But the way in which all of this reported, the distorted manner in which it is reported, reflects what are the interests that these Murdoch-owned or massive papers or mainstream media institutions are trying to defend? Or what are the interests that they're trying to shape in terms of public opinion and propaganda? All of it serves whatever it is that the British government or the British ruling class needs to promote or needs to put out there. And that's why it is very difficult to get onto these programs and put these ideas across. Nonetheless, we try and we continue. And I think what's interesting, actually, is that faith in the media as a result of this is at an all-time low. Trust in the media is actually at an all-time low, especially amongst young people. I think a lot of young people today, they don't get their news or their politics from BBC or institutions like this. And that's a small part of the reason why perhaps their politics is a bit better than what the BBC is putting out there.
Fiona Lally, I'll stop you there. More from the National Campaigns Coordinator for the UK Revolutionary Communist Party after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with UK Revolutionary Communist Party National Campaigns Coordinator Fiona Lally. Fiona, I should say about the Grenfell disaster that you were talking about at the end of part one, those companies, of course, deny it, so they murdered anyone, and that it was all a terrible accident. People can look into the Grenfell fire if they want, and at our shows we did on Rumble, the inquiry actually is not legally binding, as far as I understand it, even. But we'll get to your optimism for the future, more of your optimism. But there is, of course, this NATO war on Russia through Ukraine. Is it virtually impossible in Britain now to oppose the UK-US EU weaponry pouring into Ukraine for this war? And is it possible at all to say one wants peace talks or negotiations or any kind of settlement?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to highlight what actually is going on in regards to Ukraine. Because we should say, I mean, Starmer has promised £3 billion a year to Ukraine. He said for as long as it takes. And I think in the budget, they've budgeted £3 billion a year to Ukraine up till 2030. On top of that, I think the World Bank loans to Ukraine, Britain has underwritten them, right? So if Ukraine can't pay them back, Britain is liable. All of this money, billions and billions, and who voted for this? Who voted for that? Whilst at the same time, Starmer and the Labour Party are attacking pensioners and the winter fuel allowance. They've refused to scrap the two-child benefit cap. They're committing to spending billions and billions, whether it's to Ukraine, just to defence spending in general, to things like Trident. This is a government at war. And who voted for that? And who knows about that, really, truly? How far is that in the consciousness of people in Britain? People know that suffering is taking place in Ukraine and Putin has responded, all of this kind of stuff. But they're completely, I think, unaware of the reality of what is taking place because it's covered up through propaganda and various other things. So it's important to highlight this. And I would say to broaden it out and link it to the general militarism that the government actually promotes but isn't honest about all around the world. And that's why, you know, what I'm interested in is, you know, we're going to run a campaign called Books Not Bombs. We are opposed to this militarism, this government of war, yes, through NATO against Russia. Why is this happening? And I think we've got to make people aware of it and be honest. But it is true that the culture of criticism against the government has become very, very intense, I suppose. I mean, if you take the Palestine movement, and even in a distorted way, how Starmer responded to the far-right riots, right? These are fascist thugs committing violence against people on a mass scale. But what Starmer is doing is saying, if you criticize, if you go against this government, we will lock you up. We will have you arrested. And I think the reason that Starmer has been so quick to do that is because I think to a certain degree, he is aware that there is a deep anger that exists in Britain. If you talk to anyone about their opinion about the government, it's not going to be positive. And in fact, I would say the government is sitting on a powder keg that is waiting to explode, and it could go in many, many different directions. There is a deep anger that is because of years of austerity, inequality, worsening living standards, hypocrisy of the highest order from the British government. And that anger is what they're trying to contain. They'll contain it in any different political sphere that they can. What they've done to the far right, they will also do to the left, I'm sure of it. Whether you're speaking out against the war in Ukraine and Palestine or anything else.
Of course, those in the Israeli bankrolled cabinet of the British government would say, well, they did get a mandate and they were explicit that they wanted to support Zelensky before the election. I know they got fewer votes than Jeremy Corbyn, who actually lost when he was leader of the Labour Party. I mean, give us a sense of that support for Ukraine, because we saw flags everywhere across the country. There were Eurovision song contests for Ukraine celebrating it, despite, you know, at the same time on social media, people could see the far right banners of the Azov battalion in Ukraine. Are people tired of it, or is the media deliberately not covering it? Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians have now been killed.
I would say that I think in the recent period and the recent general election, I don't think Ukraine was a major feature. I think the major political issues of the general election were Palestine, were Gaza, inequality and austerity in the main. It is true, of course, ordinary people, most people, of course, are sympathetic and don't want to see the suffering that Ukrainians are experiencing. Of course, that is the case. And I'm sure most people that you would speak to would say that and would agree with that. However, I think people also are starting to see that what you read in the news and what the BBC reports, what the Guard, all of these different institutions, is not necessarily the truth. I can't remember who said it, that truth is the first casualty of war. And you've got to take everything you read with a grain of salt. And so it hasn't been, I would say, in the short term, the most dominant feature. But I think as the money continues to flow, whilst the austerity continues to flow, tougher and tougher questions will have to be asked of Starmer. But who will ask those questions? I'm not sure, in terms of the British government as a whole, because the Tories had a very clear support in sending money as much as possible. And so that opposition is more likely to come from outside of the British Parliament in terms of the sitting MPs and the sitting parties.
Perhaps the November US elections. I mean, I'm not asking for, you know, international brigades like the Spanish Civil War to save the Donetsk People's Republic in eastern Ukraine, or to volunteer to help the children of Gaza. But why are cultural figures in Britain so silent? Where are the novelists, writers, composers, musicians, pop musicians, artists? What is up with them? I mean, certainly on Ukraine, there has been some on Gaza, although not particularly in the music industry. On Ukraine, all I've seen is British musical figures and artistic figures supporting the NATO war in Russia through Ukraine. Yeah, except Roger Waters, who I know you know, and we know on this show.
Yes, we know Roger. I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think that perhaps because what is happening in Palestine comes across as so extreme to so many people, it feels as though the British government and the British media has really had to go into overdrive to try and justify it and try and explain it, which can push people in the opposite direction. And by comparison, in Ukraine, it's been less intense. But I think we should also wait and see. I mean, as you say, you could also talk about the complete decimation of the arts in Britain in general anyway, right? The best art is art that is truthful and art that tells the truth. But in order to create art, you need resources. And actually, the resources for that is getting tougher and tougher to come across for any musician, playwright, novelist or something or other. But in terms of where the next Orwell is, I can't answer that for you, unfortunately. But
although Orwell was a snitch, he worked for MI6 towards the end, as we know. I mean, in the absence of any mass working class movement, then what about how the global South and the BRICS and emerging economies can somehow help reinvigorate political space in the old colonial imperial power of Britain, given you paint such a dire picture of a country riven by insecurity and incompetence and inequality?
Well, I think this points to an important question, because when we look at horrors that are taking place in different parts of the world, or I think about, okay, what can I do here in Britain? What can we do about what is going on? And I would say, first and foremost, the most important thing, if you live in an imperialist country, is to do as much as you can to fight your own imperialists. That is your main target. My main, you know, political goal is to do what I can to stop British imperialism and British involvement, whether it's in oppression overseas or oppression at home, with the knowledge that if, rather than a capitalist state running rogue all over the world and at home, you had in fact a worker state that was actually fighting in the interests of the workers and what people actually want and need, not only would that start to solve the problems at home, but also globally, right? If you had a state that genuinely wanted to fight in the interests of the Palestinians or someone else or any other oppressed country, wherever it is, or oppressed peoples, that is what you have to fight for.
Yeah, but in the absence of that, can BRICS help those people in Britain trying to change Britain, much as CIA cutouts try to help US imperialism in developing world countries?
My main message and thought is that people, the working class of every single individual country, should have confidence in itself as a class alone. And its most important allies are the workers of other countries. Those are the people with the most capabilities actually to try and help another people or another country. That is my message. We cannot appeal to the better nature of other capitalist countries as the way to solve the problems of the world. I think the only way forward will be through the mass movement of workers themselves. I think class independence is extremely important in this struggle. I mean, if you take the Palestinians, for example, and the situation in Palestine has remained the same, has remained desperate for a long time, despite different governments and different regimes paying lip service to the cause of the Palestinians for a long time. It will require the material intervention of the masses, of the workers, I would say, of neighboring countries themselves. That is where I see the solution, not in appealing to the governments or states.
And weapon sales. Just finally then, you mentioned Sarah Wilkinson, I mentioned her, the journalist who was detained and is being persecuted right now. What is going to happen to you in the UK? She's of course, in Britain. As you become more successful and as those people that unite under this cause, that you have in the encampments, just on the Palestine issue, regardless of the anti-capitalist message, what do you expect is going to happen to you as you do better?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I think if I'm doing my job correctly, I probably won't be welcomed into British establishment institutions by any means. But I think it doesn't really matter what happens to me as an individual necessarily. What's much more important is the growing organization of a movement against not any one individual or any one party, but the system as a whole, which is capitalism, which is responsible for the clampdown on democratic rights, for inequality, and for war, which is being promoted all over the world. The best way, I would say, to fight against repression or the possibility of someone being arrested or anything else is to make sure that, one, you have conveyed and communicated your ideas as powerfully and effectively as possible, that they can be taken on and understood and grown by as many other people as possible. That way you can arrest someone, but you can't stop a movement. You can't stop an idea once is gripped the minds of the masses. And that is what we're striving to do every single day. So whatever happens to me, as long as there's others out there, which I'm sure there will be, given how dire the situation is, they can't stop us.
Fiona Lally, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US EU-armed genocide here in the Middle East. We'll be back on Monday when we'll speak to the founder and director of the Swiss Institute for Peace and Energy Research, Daniel Ganzer, known for his book NATO's Secret Armies, Operation Gladio and Terrorism in Western Europe. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.